Hi, and welcome to another episode of Lead Like You Give a Damn, where I speak with leaders and leadership experts who have cracked the code on leading with authenticity, purpose, and effectiveness. I'm your host, Dave McKeown, and my guest today is Jeff Brown. Jeff is a speaker, author, and the host of the podcast Read to Lead, where he has interviewed hundreds of best-selling authors. Read to Lead has been a top 10 business and top 3 career podcast on iTunes and has been nominated Best Business Podcast no fewer than 4 times. Listen as we talk about the power of reading in becoming a stronger leader and how to build a personal knowledge management system to help you keep learning for longer. Make sure you're subscribed to get the latest episodes of the show as they come out. Let me know if you have any questions, and as always, enjoy the show. Well, hey, Jeff, thanks so much for being here with me today. How are you?
I am great, and I am excited, Dave. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, not a problem. I am excited to do, I guess, the return leg of our interview series, which is going to be fun. We get to swap seats, and you get to be in the hot seat now. So, Jeff, you've got an interesting mission, which is to help bridge the gap between intention and implementation. Where do we get stuck in making that transition?
Yeah, it's, you know, in my world, reading is a big part of what I'm about and what I do and has been for 20 plus years. And I find that where a lot of people struggle, Dave, is, well, how do I take what I've read, what I've learned, and actually put that into action? How do I do something with this information, with this knowledge? And so that's what I like to do. It's why I wrote a book about reading, as meta as that sounds. You know, I want to help people understand that not only is this a habit worthy of cultivating, but how do you do it in a way that's effective? How do you do it in a way that, you know, you can maintain focus, which is something so many of us struggle with in today's day and age? And because at the end of the day, you can fill your head with knowledge. You've heard the phrase, the quote, knowledge is power. I don't believe that. Knowledge put into action is power. And only then does it have a chance to develop into wisdom over time. So knowledge is not enough, I guess, is ultimately what I'm saying. And I've sort of made it my life's mission to help people take the knowledge they've learned, a lot of it from books, and do something with it, which I've had the pleasure of doing in my own life for the last, like I said, 20 plus years.
And how did you move into that? Was it an intentional decision, or did you just sort of find yourself there one day?
I found myself there one day, honestly. You know, I spent the better part of my 20s, Dave, I didn't read at all. I left school, I left college, like, you know, thank goodness the learning's done. I don't have to do that anymore. Right. Because, you know, my school career, I don't know about yours, but my school career was all about things I had no interest in. Reading and writing about things I had no interest in. And so I sort of was conditioned that those two things, reading and writing, would be things that I just would never enjoy. And what I later realized, it's not that I didn't enjoy those things. It's just that I didn't like being bored. And I was having to, in school, read and write about things that bored me. And so it was another 10 years, probably in my early 30s, before I had a book by a guy named, who I'm sure you know and appreciate, Seth Godin, landed my lap, a book called Purple Cow, suggested to me by my then leader, fearless leader, Matt Austin, who's a guy I dearly love, best leader I've ever had. And it opened my eyes to what was out there. And I'm embarrassed to say it, but I think a lot of people are in this camp. I was in my early 30s and I wasn't aware that there are books out there that contain information about things that interest me that I might want to read. Right. And I, you know, James Clear says, and I think Atomic Habits, let your interests guide your reading, right, and you'll never be bored. And so that book from Seth, I just loved it. I ate it up. And that was around 2003. So we're talking nearly 20 years ago. And that's where my voracious reading habit began. It just grew from there. But it wasn't another 10 years before I launched a podcast on that topic. And I did that podcast for 6 or 7 years before I wrote a book about that topic. Yeah, I kind of take it slow, you might say. But yeah, it wasn't a purposeful. I just realized that I didn't hate reading. I just didn't like reading about things I didn't care about. But once I figured that part out, you know, you couldn't stop me. I just grew and grew from there, from the reading that I was doing.
What can we get as leaders in, let's say we make that realization, hey, there are some books out there that I might enjoy reading. What is it about the process of it that's particularly helpful from a leadership perspective?
Well, I have found that when you read regularly, you remain humble. I think humility is an important quality in a leader, one of the most important qualities for a leader to have. And by that, I mean, the more you read, the more you realize how much you don't know. And so that keeps you humble. I think it was C.S. Lewis who said, you know, humility isn't about thinking less of yourself. It's about thinking of yourself less, right? Mm. Humility may not always fix your problems, but it makes sure you're not the problem, right? So I think if you will read with intention and with consistency as a leader, it will help you remain humble. Again, one of the most attractive traits I think a leader can have. So what does that mean? I think ultimately that means that you will be more apt to graciously spread the credit to your team, even if they needed, you know, if they couldn't have done it without your help, right? You'll spread the credit. You'll stand out of the spotlight, let them have it. When appropriate, if things don't go according to plan, you'll shoulder a portion of the blame. Your team, your employees, your direct reports will go to battle for you. They'll take a bullet for you. They will go above and beyond for you when you can honestly, sincerely express that trait of humility. And again, I think reading really lends itself to that, because I read so many books and I'm constantly reminded of what I don't know. Can't help but stay humble when I do that.
Did your interests diverge at all after you stumbled upon Seth's work? Like, are you finding yourself reading genres that you never thought you would have? Or did you really just stay focused on, hey, I really just want to read in those areas that I am genuinely interested in?
Well, it has taken me down different paths. When I started reading Seth's book, I was really interested in marketing. I didn't have a marketing background. I didn't study marketing in school. I had a general business degree. And not too long after that, social media started coming around and like, what's this thing called social media? And what are we supposed to do with that? And how does it impact our industry? So I began reading about that and trying to get better at that. But as I began reading about those topics and putting what I was learning into action, I worked at a great company that encouraged experimentation. So as I experimented, the funny thing was, is the things I tried that didn't work were quickly forgotten. But the things I tried that did work, Dave, got me noticed. Mm. And so I began being asked to speak, something I had never done, to present something I'd never done, to different factions within the company, to the sales and international or national sales team over here and the national programming team of the broadcast conglomerate that I work for over here. Presenting was something I had never done. So I started reading about that. And I think when you find, you know, I was terrified of public speaking at the time. I wanted nothing to do with public speaking. I didn't want to get on a stage or in a room full of important people and smarter than me and pretend to try to teach them something, or at least that's how I thought of it at the time. But I needed to learn that if I was going to be able to pull this off. And so I didn't just start with public speaking. I thought, well, how can I break that down? Well, I started with presentation design. Now, that's a funny place to start, but my brain at the time was thinking, well, if I can be more sure of my slide, if I can feel confident about them, I'll be more confident and less nervous on stage. And maybe, side note, maybe people will be spending more time looking at the slides than looking at me. That'll make me feel better. And then I went from presentation design, you know, reading books like Gar Reynolds' Presentation Zen and Nancy Duarte's Slideology, to presentation delivery, and then presentation structure, and then probably where I should have started, presentation fears, right? And so I broke it down and read two or three books into each of these subcategories. Now, I would love to have consumed all that information at once and instantly have been a better speaker, or at least had some knowledge, but you can't do it that way. You got to break it down into bite-sized chunks and get better a little at a time. I was working with a group of CEOs just a couple of weeks ago, and more recently, I began to implement books on injecting humor into your public talk. Now, unfortunately for you guys here, I haven't finished those books, so I'll not be saying anything funny today. But, you know, so I'm trying to get a full breadth of the subject matter, but you got to do it a little bit at a time. So when you think about something that maybe you used to be fearful of or still are fearful of and you want to get better at, break it down into subtopics and pick two or three books. Master that one, quote unquote. I'm using air quotes. Master that one to the extent you can, and then start practicing what you've learned, then go to the next subcategory, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I mean, then that's the key, isn't it? It's about practice. Like, too often, you know, I think folks think that they'll just become, you know, let's talk about the sphere that I'm most interested in, but people believe they'll become better leaders just sort of through osmosis. You know, if I read a book or I sit through a keynote or a workshop or I listen to a podcast, you know, I'll just somehow pick something up. But that's just a lot like saying I'm going to become a better basketball player by watching LeBron James shoot around. Like, it's just, that's never going to happen. You know, you got to do something with it. And I know that's a particular focus of yours. So how do you effectively take those lessons that you're gleaning from what you're reading and actually do something with without it becoming overwhelming?
Yeah, I talk to a lot of people who say, Jeff, I take copious notes on books and other content I consume, and then I never quite get around to doing anything with those notes. And to the point you just made, that's akin to not having consumed the information at all. If you're taking notes and not doing anything with those notes, or if you're not taking notes, like you said, and just reading and consuming and then not putting that in, actually, you may well not have read the book you read. You're just wasting your time, because many people will say, well, gosh, Jeff, the way you take notes seems like it can be a fair amount of work early on. And sometimes it is. But the inverse of that is to do the reading and then not take the notes or put it into action. And then all that time is wasted. So, you know, you can either put some work into it or you can waste your time. Which do you want to do? And so for me, without getting overwhelmed, I think it's important to be really particular, set the bar high for what you take away from a book. Now, I used to be the kind of person who would, I mean, I wore out a highlighter on a book. I wore out a pen on a book, or I put stick. You get done with a book and there's just so many little notes in the margins and little underlines and all this kind of stuff that you may have just, you know, rewritten the entire book. Right. So you've got to set the bar really high. So that's what I try to do. So I look for things that grab my attention that are pertinent to something I'm working on right now or something that I've read that could be utilized to help me with something, a project I've got going on, or maybe now or in the future. Or maybe I'm interested in the topic of mindset, let's say. That's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. Let's say I'm reading a book about whatever topic and the author gets into the topic of mindset or shares his or her thoughts on that subject matter. If there's something new there to that topic I haven't thought about, but this is something that I'm wanting to learn more about, I'll make sure that comes with me, that comes out of there.
Right.
And so I use an app called Obsidian that I've been using for a few months now, which I love. It's sort of my second brain, my personal knowledge management system. And so I'll follow this, again, not to get too deep in the weeds, this sort of Zettelkasten method is German for slipbox. Nicholas Luhmann, years ago, responsible for the Zettelkasten method. I won't go into all the details of it, but suffice it to say that first step is taking what's called literature notes. And that's really setting that bar high and taking just the things that I think may be pertinent to me now or in the near future and leaving everything else behind for now anyway. And only those things become a part of my literature notes. And then at some point in the future, it may not be right then, but at some point in the future, I'm revisiting those literature notes and I'm looking at specific things that grab my attention still, that are still giving me those dopamine hits all these days or weeks later. And those are the things that I really hone in on now. And I go, okay, what unique ideas are found here? What do I really want to then take from this literature note stage? What singular idea now becomes a permanent note? A permanent note is a single idea, and it's in your own words. The worst thing you can do is take notes or copy and paste, if you will, things the author said, put it into a notebook or an app like Obsidian or whatever, come back to it weeks later, and there's no context. You have little, if any, idea why you saved this because you didn't write that down. When you take notes, you've got to write your notes in your own words and as if you're writing them for someone else, because future you is someone else. We think we're going to be the same person days, weeks, months from now. We're not. We're going to grow. We're going to evolve. We're going to change. And future you, when they come to these notes, they've got to make sense. So you've got to write like you're writing for somebody else.
The whole concept of a knowledge management system is fascinating, Jeff. Just take it up a notch and just share with us, like, what is it and what does it do for us?
Yeah, probably the simplest way I can explain it. You think about sort of the getting things done revolution from the early 2000s. David Allen came out with his book and it kind of, the business world at least, really took to sort of the getting things done methodology. And I think about what that book and that methodology did for my productivity, for my projects and my tasks in the early 2000s. Getting a personal knowledge management system does for your knowledge what getting things done did for our productivity, for our tasks, for our projects. It's sort of a getting things done for knowledge, right? And so with the system that I use, when I take notes, when I record those notes, in this case, Obsidian, my notes can link to one another. You know, a lot of people will clip something from the web or highlight something or copy and paste and save it into an app like, say, Evernote, or on their computer, where everything's in a folder hierarchy. You know, it's parent, folder, child, but everything's in a hierarchy. And then later, when you go to find a note, maybe your thoughts have changed about that thing. Maybe you saved it in a folder that made sense at the time or tagged it in a way that's made sense at the time, but now you're thinking differently and you're looking for where you think it should be. And it's not where you think it should be today, right, though the place you put it made sense at the time. And your notes aren't talking to one another. They're all in these siloed folders. But what Obsidian allows me to do, it's bottom up instead of top down. And so my notes are really independent, but my notes can be linked to one another where it makes sense. And I can look at it through a knowledge graph, through almost like, it looks like planets and stars, you know, in a sphere type setting. And I can see instantly, visually, how past notes connect to today's notes. And it opens up a whole new world for how you can connect previous ideas to today's ideas, such that you're much less likely to lose things from the past that you've collected. They bubble up to the surface more often than not. And in some of these other systems that we're all folder hierarchy type systems, especially, don't allow for, don't encourage.
And I guess just as you were talking it through there, just the connections to getting things done. And, you know, David Allen's big thing was your mind is for having ideas, not holding them.
Exactly.
And it's almost, it's kind of an echo of that, which is if getting things done was all about getting your tasks and your project, your next actions out so that your brain doesn't have to remember them. This is almost like creating a visual representation of the connections you want your brain to have around all of those subjects and topics and items in your life, right? Is that a good way to look at it?
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. I'll give you just one quick example. I was demonstrating this online workshop a couple of weeks ago of how this can benefit you. And I had written out that phrase on getting things done. I shared with you a moment ago how personal knowledge management is for our knowledge, what getting things done was for our tasks and our projects. And I wrote GTD in the sentence in Obsidian, and I put brackets around it. When you use Obsidian, you put double brackets around a word, it makes it a clickable link. Well, I had thought back to just what I'd learned from getting things done, and I wanted to create a note around getting things done. So I bracketed GDT and clicked on it. It became a blank page where I could write in, you know, what a quick definition of getting things done. And then it occurred to me that I had referenced getting things done in my notes previously, just GDT, just that abbreviation, and it bracketed. I suddenly had an epiphany. Oh, I've done this before. I've referenced GDT before. But when I went back to past references of GDT, every one of those past references in my notes were instantly and automatically linked to that new note I'd just written about.
Right.
I didn't have to go back to them and add that. They were instantly connected to the definition that I wanted to give it today, even though I hadn't done that in the past. So that's just one little minor example of how sort of personal knowledge management in the digital space can work, and in such a truly powerful way, such that much fewer of your ideas and epiphanies are getting lost over time. And plus, when you write to future you, as I hinted before, and you're doing that consistently, when you come to your notes, so often today we come to our notes and there's little context there, as I said, or it's a clipped article with nothing highlighted. So we have to start the work all over again. And if we want to get anything out of that article now, we got to reread it from beginning to end. And so future you begins trusting past you less and less and less because you haven't done your future self any favors in the process. So as you leverage a system like this, like I'm talking about, what happens is future you then is often smiling because as he or she comes back to previous notes and data, you've done the work of making it work for future you, which makes you trust your notes, which makes you want to come back to them more regularly and more likely to come back to them.
You know, let's just take the notion of a book. You talked a little bit through the process of taking your literature notes and then taking a look at them and actually sort of rewriting them in your own words for future you. Like the average book, how long would it take you to just chunk that down and process it out?
That's a good question. Well, there's one answer if I've read the whole thing, but there's another answer if I haven't. And by that, I mean, I tell people when you sit down to read a nonfiction book, first, before you read it, write down, answer the question, why am I reading this book? Or asked another way, what do I want to get out of this book? What's my goal for reading the book? And then once you've written that out, look at that, study that, and then look at the table of contents of the book and answer the question for yourself. Are there specific chapters or specific sections within chapters that directly get after this thing I'm wanting to pull from this book? It may not be the whole book. In other words, you may decide that, oh, there's three chapters that really get at what I'm trying to study or get better at or want to learn or whatever. Start with those chapters. Give yourself permission. And when you're done with those chapters, if you can look at that goal statement and go, you know what? I got it. You're done. The reading's over. You can stop now. You can put that aside and call that a read book if you want to. You can go to your Goodreads account and say, I read that book, even though it might've been three chapters because you got out of it what you said. So I say that to say, you know, this process sounds like it might be long and involved. When you approach nonfiction that way, it doesn't necessarily have to be. But to go back to your question, you know, I might spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours reading a book. And during that time, if it's a physical book, I'm making highlights. I'm sticking to just, I'm not trying to do too many things, right? If it's a Kindle book, this is even better. And I used to just not like reading eBooks at all. But since I've started developing a personal knowledge management system, I actually have begun to prefer Kindle books. I'll highlight in those books. I was just doing this with rereading a Malcolm Gladwell book, Outliers, recently. So I'm highlighting as I'm reading. And by the way, I like to listen to Malcolm read it to me from my phone while I'm reading it on my Kindle and following along with Malcolm. I love that sort of double-barreled way of getting the information. So I'm making highlights on just the things that speak to me with what I'm working on now or may want to work on in the future, then I can easily export those highlights into my personal knowledge management system, Obsidian, using a couple of different apps. Readwise is one great app that makes that super simple. And it will pull in, it'll create tags, it'll pull in the cover of the book, it'll pull in my highlights. And then I'll go through those highlights and decide, okay, what truly is resonating with me still days later? What from this, if anything, do I want to make into a permanent note that is going to be likely to be used in something I'm working on down the road, whether that's a talk or a presentation, whether that's a course, whatever it might be, a conversation, what have you.
If you could sum it up in a sentence or two, what are the benefits? What do we get? I mean, it sounds fascinating, but only because I'm kind of wired to think that way. And I'm like, yeah, I could see something like this working for me. I would fear that I would get lost in the same way that GTD has that problem of like trying to create the perfect structure and process, first of all, and just spend days and weeks and hours before actually doing anything with it.
Right.
I'm guessing is not the right place to start. But let's say we get going with it. What really, truly do we get out of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things I like about the system I'm describing is it's a notes first system. Again, it's not a hierarchy. It's not a folder structure. The emphasis is on the notes. So you're not having to worry about building anything, structuring anything. In fact, structure is enemy, at least at first. I mean,
right.
Structure will come in time as it evolves, and it will be obvious. But at the start, it's notes first. It's just notes. So what that does is, I think, it makes me more productive. It ensures better use of my time because I'm not wasting time on building structures that I don't need right now and that may not be useful to me 6 months from now anyway. So I'm not wasting that time. But also, it ensures that the knowledge you're gaining is not knowledge that is lost. I mentioned before that I talked to so many people who, you know, take notes on the content they consume, books or podcasts or YouTube videos, what have you, and then those notes get lost or they don't ever go back to them. Or they've got notebooks full of handwritten notes that are not easily accessible. You wasted your time not only in taking those notes, you wasted your time in consuming the content you consumed apart from anything you might have consumed that impacted your thinking in the moment, right? For how you, apart from that, you've wasted your time. To me, what this system does for you, what this process does for you, is to make sure you're no longer wasting that time and taking all this knowledge you've learned and allowing it to inform future decisions, allowing it to form, you know, it's borrowed creativity, right? There's nothing new under the sun. Anything you think of or do today, you're likely not the first person to think or do that thing. But as you take these notes, you want to put your spin on it, your own words to it. You don't want to just copy paste, that sort of thing. And so if you follow that type of a system, it's going to make sure that that knowledge doesn't get lost and that knowledge is serving you and the people you serve in a fresh, new, you know, Dave, Jeff sort of way.
Gosh, Jeff, I could genuinely talk to you about this all day. Where can folks find out more about you, about your fantastic podcast that we didn't even get a chance to talk about? Maybe we'll do a second episode to just talk about that. Where can they learn about personal knowledge management systems and all of the great stuff that you do there?
Yes, stay up with my podcast. I'm talking about that a lot more, especially recently. The podcast is found at readtoleadpodcast.com. Of course, you can find the show in, you know, your favorite podcast app, whatever that happens to be. And then the book, readtoleadbook.com. So readtoleadpodcast.com, readtoleadbook.com. I mentioned to you offline that just started a new cohort, a note-taking mastery cohort. It's launching soon. That one is full, but I'll probably be doing that again. I plan to a couple of times a year down the road. So if that's a topic that fascinates you, just keep up with me there and I'll probably be offering it again. So readtoleadpodcast.com, readtoleadbook.com.
Fantastic. We will be sure to put all of those in the show notes. Jeff, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your wisdom and your expertise. Really, really appreciate it.
A lot of fun, Dave. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to Lead Like You Give a Damn. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend, subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about me, the show, or the work that I do, you can go to davemckeown.com, and I'll see you next time.